Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. We're here, day two of trade period. Joining us today is our trade guru and recruiting guru, draft guru, Mark McGowan. Mark, thanks for joining us, mate.
What an intro, Macca. That's, I'll take it, but might be a bit too kind there.
No, not at all, mate, not at all. You've been working the phones. There's a lot going on. Where do you think we're placed at the moment? We're day two. It's going a bit slow at the moment, but I'm sure it'll pick up speed at some stage.
Oh, look, it always is a bit slow, but I mean, in particular, we went into this trade period knowing that we're probably not going to see the same number of deals that we've seen other years, which is simply because a lot of clubs, they just don't have list spots to start with and a bit short on money too. So, look, there's going to be a lot of news discussed. There's going to be a lot of deals thrown around. We know what this time of year is like, but it's going to be interesting just to see how many are done. But at least we got one away yesterday. So it was good to see the pick swap. Between the Pies and Suns, not the most exciting thing, not the sexiest deal, but it was good to at least see the first one off the board in the first day.
Mate, it's very sexy and it's very exciting when you're a Collingwood supporter. given that a few of us are only sort of coming out of, therapy after last year's trade period as well. It's been a pretty good 24 hours for Collingwood. It's been a rough year, but tell us about the Dacos, the pick swaps for, that'll effectively get Dacos and give Collingwood a bit of a draft hand. In the sense of trading to get some extra players as well.
Yeah, look, without going into the specifics, I mean, I think everyone's seen the deal itself, but in summary, effectively, Collingwood brought in what all of Gold Coast picks from next year into this year and handed them a whole bunch in next year's draft. So from the Suns' perspective, before we jump into the Collingwood side of things, the Suns just don't have list spots available. So for them, there's not a great deal of interest in them having a whole bunch of picks this year. So it was in their interest to be in a better position next year. So it just made sense for them to make this deal. And from the Collingwood perspective, this has been analysed to the nth degree. They needed draft points to match a bid for Nick Dacos, the boom father-son prospect. We don't know at this stage whether he'll go at 1, 2, or 3. There's a lot of discussion that he might slide to 3 now. But look, if he goes at 1, Collingwood has to be prepared for that. And to do that, they have to have 2,400 draft points. And by doing this deal, Collingwood now has almost 3,000 draft points, which has just put them in a much stronger position to not only match whatever bid comes for Nick Dacos, wherever that comes in the draft, but also to get deals done for Patrick Lipinski at the Dogs and Nathan Kruger at Geelong, both of whom want to get across to the Pies. So this is really good work from Collingwood, and it's pretty typical of what we see from Graham Wright, the new list/football boss at the Pies. He's been there for since the start of the year, and he's just a great operator. He was at Hawthorn, and he's already showing that at Collingwood.
Yeah, it certainly takes the pressure off a little bit early. I think Collingwood supporters were always worried, but it was, effectively always going to happen in a sense. But to do it so early has been really good. Obviously, there was talk about the Roos initially trying to match, throw up Nick Dacos nice and early. That's not going to happen as we understand now.
Look, I actually touched base with sort of double-digit list managers, recruiting managers at the weekend, and it's funny how it's changed. Like, we haven't seen a lot of Dacos this year. We know how good he is, but the facts are we just haven't been able to see a lot of him this year because of COVID-19. They haven't been able to play matches, whereas in South Australia, Jason Horne-Francis, the other contender for the number one pick, he's been able to play in the senior competition in the Sandful, which has just been huge for his value. And he had an enormous preliminary final performance in the Sandful. And For that performance, it's rocketed in right to the right into that number one spot for a lot of recruiters. So if North is to bid at number one on Dacos, that would be a little bit of a surprise at this stage. I think most people are suggesting that Horne-Francis is a type of personality who would actually appreciate them picking him at number one and making him the main man, even though obviously the Pies would match any bid on Dacos and the Dogs would certainly match any bid for Sam Darcy, the other guy who should go in the top three as well. But I just think it's smart work from North if they do show a bit of faith early on.
Yeah, it sure is. And it's interesting you mentioned Sam Darcy as well. What the the Bulldogs are obviously, we've seen Collingwood, you know, move some draft picks around. Is that what we're expecting from the Bulldogs as well? Just to ensure that we all know they'll get Sam Darcy, but is that what you think that they'll do over the coming days as well, and just try and strengthen that that draft hand to help out?
Yeah, you we'll definitely see it. It's just what deal ends up eventuating. We saw on the Pies' perspective, they got right ahead of this a year ago. They traded out their first-round pick, which, in hindsight, may not have been the greatest decision they ever made since they dropped to 17th, and that ended up being the number two pick, which is, certainly not what GWS thought, but they've certainly got a bit of a bargain there now. But the Dogs ended up just sitting on that pick, and now we've seen that they've got pick 17. So that's a pick of interest to various clubs. So you've seen a club like Richmond that has a whole bunch of picks in the top 40. They're certainly sniffing around that pick. And then there's even a club like Adelaide. They are in a situation with the Swans where it's a little bit of a standoff already, where they really want to bring Jordan Dawson in, who's nominated the Crows as his the club he wants to get to. They don't want to give up a top five pick or top five or six, whatever it is, for Jordan Dawson. But also the Swans aren't happy with a second round pick either. So that pick in between might be the middle ground that gets that deal done. So the Crows are certainly another club that are in that picture for the Dogs pick. But with these types of deals, it's not just a one for one, obviously. They'll be sort of packaging up a whole bunch of later picks that will give the Dogs a hell of a lot more draft points. And that will obviously appease them for that pick 17.
Just on Nick Dacos, everyone I've spoken to said that he'll handle the pressure of, you know, the Collingwood supporters will put on him. Collingwood won't have had a pick that high for a number of years. What's your reading on how Nick Dacos will handle the expectation and the pressure that will almost certainly go on him from Collingwood fans?
A lot of it's guesswork, isn't it? We don't really know until it happens, but everything we know about this kid, he's pretty confident. He obviously comes from, a family that's lived this experience. Peter Dacos, his dad, is an all-time great of this footy club. His brother, Josh, has become a really good footballer in his own right at Collingwood already. So he'll have his brother to lean on at the club, and then obviously he can fall back on his dad. Obviously was a star in his playing days and would have had that expectation on a weekly basis. But Nick's coming in. Look, there's no doubt it's been hyped. He can't fix it all himself. He's not going to come in and be the man who leads them to the promised land. But he's certainly a nice piece. He's going to graduate into that midfield at some stage. It might be a bit ambitious to think he's going to be a regular in there in his first season. But I think we had Nathan Buckley some stage this year mentioned that if he was available and he was playing this year, he might have actually made it into the senior side. So I think that gives us a pretty good indication of just how good this kid is.
Yeah, we're the number 35 being the first selection from Collingwood. So there's a nice little bit of symmetry there as well. Obviously, you mentioned before about Lipinski and Kruger coming in. Who goes out from Collingwood? Have you got a read that the Pies might do a bit of trading with, you know, along the lines of a Mason Cox or Big Max Lynch or even Braden Sire, somewhere in that sort of bracket as well?
It's an interesting one. Like Max Lynch is obviously you could call him the number two ruckman or the number three. There's sort of Darcy Cameron in that mix as well, but he's been playing sort of that forward ruck role too. So he's been getting a bit of a chance at senior level, whereas Lynch is probably seen more as a true ruckman and has struggled for senior opportunities. But there's certainly been interest in him going back even to last year. Hawthorn asked the question and he elected to stick around in the black and white, but another year of not a great deal of opportunity. And you can't see that changing a great deal. Brody Grundy's on a long-term contract. He's one of the best ruckmen in the comp. So Lynch has a lot to weigh up on what he wants to do. But at the same time, the interest has to be there for him. And there are a few ruckmen that are on the market at the moment, and some of them contracted, some not. But Lynch at this stage hasn't signed a contract and he's certainly exploring his options. Mason Cox is an interesting one. Like, he's obviously been seen mostly as a forward throughout his career, but we know he's certainly got ruckman height. He's a giant. So he can play that ruck role, but at the same time, he's getting towards age 30, or he might already be 30. And it's quite clear the Pies are going through a rebuilding stage. And I think they've basically said to him, look, we'll take you back, but it's probably in your best interest if you try and find somewhere else to go. And I think that makes sense. But I think the Pies would be fairly keen to retain Lynch. It's just whether Lynch wants to stay and fight it out, I think. But someone like Braden Sire, I can't see him having a trade suitor. And he might even find it difficult to find another club. But if he is to find another one, I think it'd probably be in that delisted free agency space. What do you reckon, Mackie? You're a Collingwood man.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I'd love to keep Max Lynch. He's the sort of guy you'd really love to keep around the club. Braden Sy's had his chances. I'm not sure he'll be picked up. And Mason Cox is definitely a watch this space. He's got to an age now where both, you know, Mason Cox and, you know, Max Lynch needs to play footy as well. You made a really good point there as well. Just on you touched on this before about, it's a bit like going into a yearling sale where you don't know what your budget it is, but you got to go and try and buy a little horse there as well to get through. The AFL, the clubs don't know yet, do they, exactly what the salary cap's going to be? They've got a little bit of a hint about list sizes. Is this why do you think that we're in a situation where it is going to be, a quieter sort of trade period than it was last year?
I think it's definitely a factor. We saw the list size cuts last year, obviously, again, related to COVID, but I think the AFL was keen to get them down anyway, and that sort of gave them an excuse. But we saw that happen, and then we're probably seeing the flow-on effects this year of, players are still contracted beyond this year, which limits what clubs can do, but we're seeing them sort of moving primary listed players onto the rookie list to open spots. But realistically, we're not seeing a great deal of movement. We're going to see probably minimal players drafted again. Everyone I've spoken to is suggesting there might only be sort of your 50, 60 players drafted, which is, a lot less than other years across the rookie and national drafts. And you mentioned the salary cap situation. Yes, clubs can, budget it into contracts, that if a percentage cut happens here, this is what your contract will look like. But at the same time, it just creates that uncertainty. And I know Graham Wright was quite strong on it only last week about, it's crazy that we don't know at this stage. The AFL's had a heck of a lot on their plate. We all know that. But at the same time, the clubs have got a job to do. This is a professional competition. They're dealing with people's lives here and livelihoods. So it's something that needs to be sorted out pretty quick, smart. But I think that the indication so far is that there's not going to be any list size changes, that they have communicated that to clubs, even if it's informal. But the salary cap remains a talking point because the AFLPA and the AFL are negotiating a new deal. And it wouldn't just be for next year. It would be potentially into 2023, 2024. If that deal isn't reached anytime soon, it'll just be status quo. So they'll just continue on what they were planning on. But again, it's uncertainty and it's already a difficult space crunching the numbers, and this is only making it more difficult.
Sure is. Just a quick one before we go to a break. Interested in your feeling on the length of trade period and what you think it should be. We've got 10 days going through to next Wednesday, a 7:30 finish. Have you got a feeling of whether it should be a shorter, more condensed sort of period and whether that would, placate some of the people out there who just seem to love it 24 hours a day?
Oh, look, it's become an industry, hasn't it? A trade period. Man. You got trade radio and they got their sponsors. They got the roll out the ex-players to have comments on everything, list management space. But look, it's an interesting one. I've got two sort of takes on it, I guess. It's one of those is I follow the American sport quite closely, and they do have a window, a trade period window, if you want to call it that, but it's an extended one. It's not just a 10-day period. So you won't see deals happening every day, and it's not a discussion constantly, but it's a rolling period. So there's not so much focus on it, but deals can be done over an extended period and, it could be in season, whatever it is. I wouldn't be totally against something like that, but obviously you've got, a different scenario. There's a lot more money involved over there, so players can more quickly or easily switch clubs and switch states if they need to, because they've got so much more money behind them. So that might be a difficulty with that. But as far as the length, look, I think it's still probably about right, because there needs to be a little bit of that back and forth on, to broker deals. We saw only a couple of years ago the Jesse Hogan deal between Fremantle and Melbourne. There was, I think at one point that was completely off and Fremantle was saying, nope, we're not doing a deal. We're not doing this. They're asking too much and all this sort of stuff. And it needed that sort of quieting period to for them to bounce back. But look, I think we're seeing a bit of a quieter year this year, but I think overall probably the 10 days is probably just about right.
And one of the great certainties, Mark, without any shadow of a doubt, that theatrical-wise, the AFL will make sure one of the deals goes through at 7:29 next Wednesday, won't they? So, mate,
we'll be back
in a moment. We're going to focus on the big men. I'm interested to, you talked about the Ruckman before, so we'll be back in a moment to talk about the Ruckman on the market at the moment. Welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Mark McGowan's with us. Mark, we talked before about the Ruckman, the rise of the Ruckman. We saw Max Gawn dominate the preliminary final and Luke Jackson get the Demons, help the Demons well and truly knock off the Bulldogs in the grand final. It seems as if the Ruckman are certainly the flavour. They're not the number one Ruckman on the market at the moment, but there's plenty about with clubs looking at picking up a few different Ruckman.
Yeah, I think Max Gawn's success and his major role in Melbourne's rise, I think that almost changes the narrative a little bit, because we'd seen for so long, everyone was pointing out over about a decade period that there hadn't been a full-on star Ruckman in a premiership side. So everyone was sort of questioning their worth. But I think if you look at the 1-2 punch between Max Gawn and Luke Jackson, there's no doubt it was integral to what the Demons did this year. And you look at that third quarter and Jackson played a huge role in turning that match, which was an incredible momentum shift. It's one we probably haven't seen in a grand final. So there's a lot going on in this space, and there always is. I love the annual ruck merry-go-round. It's always a bit of a laugh that you see the backup ruckman suddenly become, you know, suddenly huge profiles, and we don't, you know,
exactly.
Have only played two games for the year, and they're suddenly, you know, the sort of the players who can turn a new club around. But the interesting one in this one, we heard a new name come up yesterday, which we reported on the Herald Sun site. You know, Tristan Sherry at North Melbourne. You know, he's a guy who hasn't had a great deal of opportunity at North Melbourne. They're obviously looking to bring in Callum Coleman-Jones from Richmond as well. Todd Goldstein's still there. So St Kilda's asked the question of Sherry, and as far as I'm on my knowledge, they're quite a way down the track with that one. But obviously he's contracted, so North Melbourne would have to be willing to deal him. But he hadn't been discussed until yesterday, hadn't come up. So he's another interesting piece into that discussion, because we've also got a guy like Jordan Sweet, who hasn't played many games at the Dogs. He's suddenly popped up on West Coast radar. St Kilda had also asked about him. But then you've also got a guy like Peter Laddams over at Port Adelaide. He's been playing fairly regularly in the senior side, but only as the number two. He's very much a forward ruck, and Scott Lysette is the main man there. And Port Adelaide's basically said to him, they've been pretty honest and said, look, you're not going to be the number one man here. If you want to be that man, you're going to have to go elsewhere. And there are clubs that want him. My understanding is that Hawthorn and Sydney are the two clubs very much leading that race and showing the most interest. And the Swans have been interested in him in the past, and the Hawks very much have an opening there. They need a young ruckman to come in and really grab that top spot, because you've obviously got Ben McAvoy and John Segler both on the wrong side of 30. And they've told Segler, look, it's probably in your best interest to move on. And again, from what I've been told within industry sources, that they might be willing to actually pay a little bit of his contract as well to move him on. So it's a really interesting space. There's a lot of moving parts, but I think we're going to see a few deals come up in the next week or so.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Just on the Callum Coleman-Jones scenario, and obviously the Kangaroos playing hardball, he could slip through to a pre-season draft. Obviously, the Kangaroos would want to get it done earlier. And what's your feeling on where it'll end up with Callum Coleman-Jones? And you would think he would get to North Melbourne. It's just a question of whether, you know, a deal can be done sooner rather than later.
I think the Roos just have got the whip hand here. They're just sort of looking at it going, look, we can slip him through to the preseason draft, and the Tigers know it. They know this sort of stuff goes on. And on top of that, North also knows that Richmond want Robbie Tarrant, and they probably don't want to sign him as a free agent, because they've already lost Marbior Chole to the Gold Coast. They're planning on getting end of second round compensation for Chole, but if they sign Tarrant as a free agent, suddenly that gets diluted and they probably end up with nothing. So that's also in Richmond's best interest to involve Tarrant in that deal, potentially with Coleman-Jones. So at this stage, they're not offering much. You know, I think it's a future third at this stage is the opening offer, which it seems a bit rough, because this is a guy who was a number 20 pick back in the day. And from what we saw this year, he's really blossoming nicely. You know, he can play forward and kick your 4 or 5 goals on his day, but he's going there to be Todd Goldstein's ruck successor. So he's certainly got ability, and they clearly rate him and are going to place a fair bit of faith in him on a long-term deal. But at the moment, North Melbourne is very much in the box seat here as far as controlling negotiations. So it's going to be one of those ones, when does Richmond blink, I suppose. But they're certainly not getting that pick 20 that they want.
No, not at all. You've been reporting a story going up at the moment with Tom Cleary and Port Adelaide, and you know, there's been a lot of conjecture about whether he stays or goes. What's going to happen with him, do you think, at this stage?
Well, look, as we know, he fell out of favour, you know, after he broke his jaw in, I think it was about round nine, against the Dogs, and just couldn't get back in. Trent McKenzie took his spot and never gave it back. So you've got a situation here where Cleary's still contracted for two more years, but the problematic nature with his contract is that it's heavily back-ended. So that's putting off clubs a little bit who might have been sniffing around to see if he could come in and fill a role for them. He's definitely of interest. We've seen a few clubs ask the question. My understanding is North Melbourne, St Kilda and Carlton have all shown preliminary interest. It hasn't gone too far, but they've certainly asked the question. But the problem is they're just balking at how much money he's still owed in those last 2 years. And that clubs, as we've discussed before, they just don't have the money at the moment. They're still weighing up what's going to happen with this salary cap. They've also got limited list spots that they just don't have the money to be giving a guy who is still a bit of a risk. Like, this is a guy who fell out of the senior side. So if they're going to do it, it's going to have to change his thinking, because at this stage, he's looking like he'll stick it out and try and win his spot back. And Port Adelaide did tell him in his exit meeting in the days after their preliminary final loss that he was a required player. So at this stage, he'll stay where he is, but don't rule out another club jumping in and making a big play.
Always interested in what's happening with the Gold Coast and whether there's a, you know, a salary cap dump or the like. What's going on with Darcy McPherson? There was a little bit of interest from North Melbourne. What's happening there at this stage, do you think, mate?
It's an interesting one. It's one that popped up right on trade period eve. Look, Darcy McPherson is a guy who, I think he finished about top five in their BNF in 2019. Obviously doesn't have a huge profile. And they were a bit of a struggling side at that stage and probably still are, but he'd fallen out of favour again this year. So the Suns were looking at, they haven't been public with it, and they've sort of tried to deny it a little bit, but there's no doubt it's a bit of a salary dump. You know, again, they're limited in list spots. So they're trying to move out Darcy McPherson and Will Brody, but Darcy McPherson is the one that's attracted a little bit of interest from North Melbourne and Hawthorn if they include that pick 19. That's the big appealing one here. It's not so much getting Darcy McPherson, it's getting another top 20 pick. And that pick is actually one of the concession picks that the AFL's awarded them as part of this rescue package for the Suns. And so that's created a little bit of conjecture as well. Should they be getting this pick and then just using it to save themselves from their own contracting dilemmas? But at the moment, Darcy McPherson doesn't want to go. And that's his right, because he's contracted for next year. And that's creating a bit of a headache for Gold Coast, because they've actually got clubs that are takers, but now Darcy doesn't want to go. And as we know, it's not like overseas sport. The clubs need a tick off from the player to get it done.
Would you like to see that change? Or is that something that you think gives a little bit of certainty to players, you know, in terms of a contract, having a little bit of a whip hand there in a sense?
Yeah, it sort of goes back to what I said earlier about, I actually would love the clubs to get back a bit of power, because I think it is too much player driven at the moment. But the problem is, we are a national competition, and if you're expecting a player to, you know, pack their bags and move into state at a moment's notice, potentially if it's in season or it's post-season, we're talking about all the costs related in that. And these guys are on, some of these lower guys are potentially only on, you know, 100 grand plus. Obviously, we know about the rich guys, but these fringe guys who are changing clubs, seeking greater opportunity, they don't get those same opportunities, the same monetary reward. And, you know, you're looking at buying a house, whether it's renting, you've got to sell your house potentially in another state. There's all sorts of factors. So, yes, I would like to see the balance of power switch a little bit more to the clubs in that respect, but I think it's not as simple as what a lot of people think.
Just on a couple of, you know, much talked about discussion points, Jordan Clark. Does he get to Fremantle, and will there be a scenario? And just the Geelong Ambit claim, you're allowed to do that at Geelong. They've got a bit of criticism for pick eight, but you're allowed to start somewhere. And also on Jordan Dawson, what's going to happen there, do you think, mate?
Yeah, I think we all got a laugh out of that, starting with the number.
You've got to have a bit of fun, don't you?
Well, that's why we need 10 days of trade period, because you've got to be able to, you know, you start high, or in North Melbourne's case, you start really low in what you want to bring in. But look, I think we all know pick eight's not going to be involved. There's no way that Freo's going to hand that over. But I think we'll end up seeing it. It's still a decent pick because this is a kid who was a first-round pick, and probably the main reason he's not playing is they just have so many veterans in that team. And we've obviously been, there's been a little bit of discussion around Matt Scarlett not rating him as a defender, which limited the positions he could play within the side. But I think you will end up getting across to the West because this story's been going around for so long now, probably even going back to last year where he just wasn't getting a game. And now you've got a club that wants him, and it's from his home state. I think the deal gets done, but again, it might take a little while to get there. And the Jordan Dawson one, again, he's out of contract. And that's what the Crows have got here. If they have to, they'll send him through to the preseason draft. And the way it is these days, other clubs don't tend to jump in, even if they have a pick before the other club in the preseason draft. They either won't have a list spot, so they won't even be a player in the preseason draft, or they tend not to go in, similar to back to Jack Martin when he got through when Gold Coast and Carlton couldn't reach a trade or a suitable trade. Melbourne could have grabbed him, but Jack Martin didn't want to go there, and so they put a huge price on his head, front-ended the contract, and it was like $1 million a year or something like that for the first year or so, and then obviously a lot less at the end of it. So I think you'll see both of those deals get done. It's just a matter of when we get there.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back. I want to talk to you, Mark, about three big Victorian clubs. Welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Carlton with a big... players last year, weren't they, Mark? And they threatened to be the same this year. They've obviously already got George Hewitt through free agency. What's your take on Carlton and their list strategy at the moment in terms of, obviously, they're in for Adam Scherer and that'll happen. Lewis Young's a possibility to go there as well. What's your take on the Blues and since Michael Voss has taken over?
Yeah, I'd imagine a lot of this was done pre-Michael Voss. I mean, he's only been appointed in sort of recent weeks. So, but he'd obviously be having a say at this stage on the sort of players he wants in. But I think we know Carlton went to the draft a lot in the past. So they do have a lot of kids on their list. So at this stage now, they're trying to bring in that experience, mature talent to accelerate the on-field performance now. They're on record. They want to play finals next year. No excuses. That's the pass-fail mark. And we've seen them not play finals for a very long time. So to do that, George Hewitt comes in, as you said, as a free agent. Adam Chera has nominated them as well. That trade should get done. But again, there's going to be a little back and forth on that one. The pick six will be involved, you'd imagine, from the Carlton side of things. But whether they need to give a lot more on top of that's going to be a wait and see. But Lewis Young, I think, comes in as sort of probably more ruck depth. Key defensive depth, but also can key play in the ruck if required. Yeah, he's more of a sort of that intercepting defender. And we know Sam Petrevsky Seaton looks like he's on the way out off the West Coast. So a bit going on, active again after what we saw last year with Zach Williams and Adam Saad. So they're definitely trying to fast track this rebuild. Nick Austin's there. He's been there another couple of years as list boss now. So it's now or never for Carlton. They want to be starting to make the most of this list they've got.
Yeah, the president's already said finals next year for sure. So we'll hold them to that. Just on Hawthorn as well, they're one of the fascinating ones to watch, I think. And Sam Mitchell's made no secret of the fact that he's keen to look at the draft and thinks that perhaps that's been an area where the Hawks have maybe not done as well as they should have in recent times. How active do you think they're going to be in terms of trying to get a better draft hand than they've currently? They've currently got a good one, but will they continue to push the envelope there, do you think?
Well, there's been a little bit of talk that they've asked the Suns about that pick three, and so potentially that might involve them trading up from their first pick already that's in the top 10, but that remains to be seen. But look, I've actually liked that they've finally started to invest in the draft the last couple of years. They've brought in some nice players. We've sent Denver Granger Barras, Will Day the year before that. Finn McGuinness is going to re-sign for 2 years, another father-son. They've just started to finally draft kids again. And not only that, they're giving kids games. That was the mistake they made for a long time there. And I think they're finally starting to fix that mistake. And as you pointed out yourself, Sam Mitchell, he knows the value of the draft. He came through it himself.
Sure did.
That's the future for the Hawks. If this is going to be turned around and they're going to do it, they have to do it that way. They can't trade themselves out of it. They tried to do that for a long time and it backfired on them a little bit. But as we touched on earlier, John Segler's been told to explore his options. So that's the first one. But do we see an even bigger name that comes into the reckoning over the next sort of week? You know, you've got guys like Jack Gunston being thrown up, Tom Mitchell. There's some very interesting names there that are probably closer to the end than the start. But the problem is, are you going to get a really high pick? And if you don't, is it really worth
a fire sale on quality talent. You still need good players at your club, and you still need good players to teach the kids, you know, the standards and how to go about it.
Yeah, well, Sam Mitchell knows about the power of the trade already. Just a couple of days after winning a best and fairest, he was off to West Coast. So he knows all about that, doesn't he? The other club that I'm fascinated at the moment is Richmond. They've got a really good draft hand that could even get better in that situation. Do you expect we'll see any surprises from the Tigers? And what do you think their strategy will be going forward?
Well, I think we saw a bit of a surprise with the Robbie Tarrant news. I mean, it makes sense because obviously we saw David Asprey retire. You know, he was playing that fullback role, taking on the big gorillas on the other side. And that surprised them a little bit. I think they were open to David playing for at least another year. But Tarrant will come in. We've seen that. But outside of that, obviously Coleman Jones is going to go out. Chol has already signed with the Suns. I don't think we're going to see them be hugely active. I think their focus is very much on that draft, and they've got a lot of picks there in that top 40. I think their plan and their priority would be to try and package them up and get even higher. They don't need to take that many picks into the draft. They just want to have quality ones.
Mate, if I'm putting you on the spot here, is there a shock headline or whatever from trade period? Is there something you think will surprise us? We're thinking it's pretty stock standard at the moment, but is there a potential for a big shock, do you think?
Well, I think it could be a club like a Hawthorn. We've already seen them. They spoke to the Herald Sun and said, we want to be aggressive here. We want to be active. Whether it's a shock because it's already been talked about, but I think either way, if they end up pulling the trigger on one of those real high-profile guys, that's going to send shockwaves. And it'll be really interesting to see which club would be prepared to do it. Richmond was linked a little bit to Mitchell, but there's never been any serious movement in that space. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think that we're probably going to be let down a little bit. But you just never know. We've got 9 more days of this to come. And at this time of year, I'm so conditioned to expect anything. So I'm very much looking forward to see what happens. Even if it's going to be a wait, there'll be something. There's always a twist in trade period.
Yeah, there'll be a 7/29 trade go through. We know that. But whatever you do, everyone listening, just make sure you keep an eye on Super Footy through this time and the Herald Sun as well. We'll be all over it. And Mark, you've been outstanding again today. You're one of the best in the business with the trade and the draft window. Really appreciate your time, and hopefully we can get you back on again soon.
On you, Macca.